The subject of today's Dharma talk is compassion. And Trungpa Rinpoche, one of the great creative and forthright Tibetan teachers of our time, said it most succinctly. Compassion is facing reality with an open heart. Compassion is facing reality with an open heart. A tenderness to whatever is happening, which takes a lot of courage, actually, because whatever that is happening that's difficult to bear, we usually want to turn away from, strike out at, or close down. The reality we're faced with day to day is that we live in a world, on a planet that's always shifting and changing. There are hurricanes and earthquakes and tsunamis and cyclones and changing weather patterns that melt the ice caps. We hear more about it. We are more intimate with it all because of this electronic age that we live in. We're more intimate with the global environment than ever before. And so there's a lot of reason to develop compassion. We're deeply affected by devastation, by the loss of lives, by the human suffering that these natural events are the cause of. Even though the beings are far away, our hearts can feel torn apart. I know I felt that during the devastation in Japan. It was hard to look at online, but I made myself look at a lot of what was happening and really tested my ability to have enough courage and care to see what was going on with individuals' lives, with whole communities. We can be deeply affected by all this, even though it's not right next door to us. And so in this day and age, it's so important to learn to incline the mind towards that courage and caring of compassion that keeps us open to the world around us and not numb out with what's going on. We're deeply touched by the shifting and changing military powers in other countries. We're hearing a lot about Egypt, and of course, myself and others in the Dharma are very close to what's happening kind of behind the scenes of in Burma. We know the military powers that go on there and some of the strife that's happening that we don't hear about kind of on the surface. The religious and social, political, and cultural struggles that people experience. We're faced with all of this. We have to be careful, actually, that we're not getting so much information that it bogs us down, that we can stay afloat. So there's many opportunities to develop compassion if we're careful. There's many opportunities to avert the mind from closing down or from striking out at or from numbing out. It's really important to do that, to turn the mind towards staying open and yet protecting it so there's a sense of balance within us. In our own country, we can see, as David Loy, one of my colleagues, a Buddhist scholar, a Zen teacher, and an author, points out, we live in a time, he says, and a culture where, in large part, but not totally, that's my caveat, our economic system institutionalizes greed. The military not only exists for protection, but it is institutionalized ill will. And much of it, but not all, of the media is institutionalized delusion. So we live with all of this around us. And we contribute to it ourselves by buying into it and by not really seeing with a balanced mind, with a clear mind, largely because it's very difficult for us to stay open to what's difficult to bear. It's challenging to see this all with an open heart of compassion. We don't have the intentional practice to do so, usually. And there is the mind and heart on the individual level, on the moment-to-moment level. If we do our practice, we see what's going on within. If we're honest with ourselves and we become more and more mindful, we see harmful qualities of holding on, of striking out, of ill will, of closing down with fear or striking out with fear, of confusion and delusion emanating from within. And of course, there are some of us, many of us, who at moments know that it's not me, not mine, not who I am, just a passing event happening in the inner world. But still, it can be debilitating. It can take over. It can repeat so much that we think it's really, truly real. They play out over and over again because of habit and because of not recognizing the habit. So the changing reality of inner life, the changing reality of our own country, the vulnerability of those two at all levels, this is what we're facing day to day, moment to moment. But even so, during these times, I've heard many people close to me speak of realizing strengths they did not know they had, or not even just speaking about them, but just embodying them, seeing the strength of being open to realizing the vulnerability of life and still staying with it. Touching in spontaneously to the strong presence of unconditional love in, within them and around them. This unconditional love that comes spontaneously even in the face of suffering, this is actually compassion. The ability to open to suffering with unconditional love, with a heart that's wide, able to accept it, and yet not collapse, not close down, not strike out. I've heard so many speak about or embody what it means to live a life that continues to deepen into the truth, into the Dharma, into how it is. And not to just be satisfied with what they've already come to understand, not to stagnate. It's a continually deepening process. So there's a lot of growth that comes from facing what is difficult to face. There's a dear friend of ours that many of you know, Margie Nydorf. She's been a cook for our retreats for many years, for all the years that we've been out in Kayanai, and also for many of the years that we've done retreats here at Silver Cloud Ranch. And this is an example of such openness to vulnerability and such strength. So we hear from her on this Caring Bridge connection, on this place on the internet where many people can go to learn about a certain person that's going through a medical crisis. So she starts out on this Caring Bridge entry with this poem by Rumi called The Guest House. And then she writes about it after that. She's given me permission to read what she wrote. The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows, who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. So then she writes, in 1 week, I'll be going to the hospital for surgery that will deprive me of about one-third of the organ responsible for allowing my body to receive the breath of life. The surgery will also be the means for determining whether I have non-invasive versus an aggressive form of cancer growing in my lungs. The stakes are high. Rumi reminds me that all of this may be some kind of blessing with its own gifts to offer. My house feels swept clean. I am somehow feeling more fully alive with the life-threatening diagnosis right here in my face. I am re-examining my relationship to every aspect of my life and asking the questions, how does this serve me and all that is of value to me? What is of value to me anyway? I don't have all the answers, but the process has been enlivening, energizing, and sometimes fun. And so I'm planning to welcome my next guest honorably. And that's Margie Neidorf, a very courageous and caring human being. Such openness and courage to all of that vulnerability. It's pretty amazing. Right here in our midst, we have such beautiful examples. So what we do in our mindfulness practice is we're opening and facing the vulnerability of being human. These are the truths of life, the inner habit patterns that we face day to day and more closely moment to moment, the realities of the world around us and how we respond to those realities around us day by day, how they interrelate, how one thing causes another. This is the deepening growth into the Dharma. We continue our journey to open with more honesty, hopefully, so we're not just averting to what's more pleasurable. To do that, we need the strength of compassion, not just mindfulness. We need the ability to face life with a kind of courage that really faces life. Keeping our hearts open, deepening our understanding, strengthening our ability to be unconditionally kind to ourselves and others. And of course, the ready ability to respond wisely, out of seeing clearly, out of the reliability we have on our kindness. From what I hear and see in the various communities that I'm connected with, and what I feel in my own heart, there is a growing sense of urgency to help, to do what we can, to offer our gifts, however insignificant we may think them to be, to be able to touch the world with that kindness, with that courage to face what's going on that's difficult. All of us collectively did that last our day-long sitting. You offered your generosity in the bowl there, and Steve and I took the liberty, because you offered it to us, to offer it to the people of Japan. And so many more others, much more Donna came from afterwards and from other communities. And so as a group, we were able to offer $1,200 to the Mercy Corps for what was going on. So I wanted you to feel happy about that, that as a community, we really contributed to something that was, we faced, that was happening, difficult in our hearts, difficult in the world. We want to touch the world with simplicity and slowing down. I read something just recently from Thomas Merton, who said that one of the greatest ways we can be compassionate is to slow down, is to live a more simple life. Because one of the ways that we are most violent is that we're rushing around so much. I wish I had his quote, but I do somewhere, and I'll put it out there for you to see. But this is another way that we can be so compassionate to ourselves and others, is just to slow down. We're able to touch the world with kindness more that way. So equally as strong and growing within us is this urgency for some to go within, to go deep within. It's so interesting that in these difficult economic times, there are more people signing up for retreats than ever before. There are more last-minute sign-ups for retreats, and people who have done shorter retreats jump to go from, 9 days to 3 months that we've seen happening, that we've not seen in the last 25 years that I've been privy to this information. So there's a strong growing spiritual urgency to go deeper within and not to just be satisfied with our day-to-day kind of how we understand the world. There's a deeper way that we can understand life and the world and our own hearts. To take the time to know the inner landscape with more clarity, to touch our hearts with the gentleness and kindness that we don't give it. How can we give the world a gentleness and kindness when we can't give it to ourselves in a deep, deep way? So what can we do to do that? It takes a lot of compassion and courage to be able to do that. The courage to experience with an ever-deepening clarity what's going on deep within. To let the layers of our hearts be exposed. It takes a lot of just being able to face it, to do that. To gently accept the places where we're caught and we kind of get lost in the tangle. The pain of the body, pain of the mind, resentment, aversion, arrogance, attachment. When we rest in that place where there's a sense of freedom, where there's not being caught, we see the momentariness of resting in equanimity, gratitude, goodwill, nothingness, and the ability to be there more and more. So it's a long-range view, it's a long-range project in a way. But when we take that long range, just giving us ourselves that space, we see the accessibility of it, that it can come in any moment. And that a moment of freedom means a lot. And it can add up to many, many other moments of freedom, to where we're experiencing that most of the time or much of the time. It takes sobering honesty and unflinching courage and a rare kind of caring about peace in ourselves to make peace in the world. There has to be this willingness to open to the underpinnings of what we call the personality, this body and the reactivity to the body, the mind states that come, this world and the reactivity to the world, those mind states that come, the wholesome and the unwholesome, to accept every part of it with a gentleness and a clarity. One of my favorite quotes is from Agnes Au, a person of color. She wrote in this Shambhala Sun that was dedicated to writers of people of color. It was an article about how in practice when there is underlaying exposing of the patterns deep within, the psychophysical knots that are unfurled, and how it's so important, as she says, and I quote her, "I see this path is actually an invitation to strip naked at one's own pace, and in so doing to experience the vividness of an unfiltered life." How many of us are really willing to do that? Through this process, we discover the habitual forces that make up what is called Kamala, or me, or mine, what we take as mine, what we take as me, or who I am. The forces that create this inner terrain, this personality that comprises what walks about in this world and has opinions and ideas and projections onto this world that make the world around us, that has an effect on the outer terrain of this world. So through this vividness, we notice what creates peace, what creates harmony, what creates unrest on an individual level, on a social level. And we learn to incline more and more towards what creates what's beneficial, what's wholesome. And we try to nourish that. We also notice what creates disharmony, unrest, distress on an individual level, on a social level. They are noticed all too easily. And we do the best in our practice to be clear and spacious, be willing to open to all of that. Because when the unwholesome patterns and forces are recognized before they can affect our speech and behavior, we can let go of them easily, and we don't create that unrest and that distress in the outer world around us. So that greed, hatred, and delusion are not nourished through habit, but they're relinquished through mindfulness, through awareness. There's a story that I love of a grandmother with her grandson. And the grandson approaches the grandmother and says, "Grandmother, there are two wolves fighting in my heart. One wolf is vengeful and hateful and has a lot of ill will and wants to inflict pain upon others and myself. And the other wolf is caring and has a lot of compassion and loving kindness and wants to help and create what's beneficial in the world." And he asks the grandmother, "Which one will win, oh grandmother? Which one will win?" And the grandmother says, "The one you feed. The one you feed." Which one are you feeding? And so I remember that story because I remember to ask myself, what am I feeding? Am I feeding the places that cause disharmony, or the places that cause harmony? And if I can realize it soon enough, can I incline the mind to what's beneficial, to what creates harmony? Can I notice with courageous courage and mindfulness what isn't creating harmony, and disengage from that? Not push it away, but notice it with mindfulness. When we're really mindful, one notices that as soon as mindfulness turns to whatever it turns to, it sees the impermanent nature of it. And from there it can see the suffering nature of it, and can also see the selfless nature of it. So there's a lot of freedom in a moment of mindfulness when one sees very strongly and clearly. If you look at the Dharma in its simplest pragmatic way, the Buddha's teaching is about cultivating and nurturing what creates a wholesome sense of peace and harmony within and without, outside of ourselves. It's about relinquishing and disarming what is harmful, what is not useful, letting go of that. And then from there, as a platform, wisdom has a chance to grow, to develop as the fruit of those two main ingredients. Without doing this inner quiet investigation, clearly recognizing the inner landscape, we can never hope to have a truthful, beneficial effect on the outer landscape of the world. To touch the world with kindness over and over again in spontaneous, easy ways. Granted, with our practice, we may not change the whole world, or even, as I know, we may not even change our families or people close around us. But in fact, transforming our own hearts can be a real possibility. The peace in the world that we feel can be largely the peace that we feel in our own hearts. It sends ripples out that reach people far and wide, maybe sometimes not so near. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, compassion doesn't make the atrocities of the world disappear or see them as right. It stops them from happening in our own hearts, the atrocities of our own hearts. That's where we live, in that world, mostly. That has an infinite outreach in the world because we're so strongly and infinitely connected. Usually compassion is thought of in terms of saving others, facing this, especially with activists, facing the struggles of the world out there and acting to relieve them or transform them. And this is true, and it's part of our responsibility, and it's our natural instinct as human beings. But we may altogether miss a very important first step, and that is the tender-hearted care and wisdom to face the difficulties, the atrocities that go on in our own hearts, willingly, intentionally, to face the struggles and the painful places within. Karuna is a Sanskrit and the Pali word. Pali is a language that during the time of the Buddha was used to codify the Buddha's teachings. It translates in both Tibetan and Sanskrit and Pali as noble heart. It's a heart that's able to open to what's difficult, to the suffering, and to know the skillful response to it. The skillful response, the immediate skillful response, is compassion. And from there, then a lot of responsible action can take place. So just because many of us, and I myself too, have opened a lot to what goes on within, I know all too clearly and closely that there's a lot of heartache and suffering, grief and fear. There's ill will lessening through the years, resentment also, confusion, uncontrollability. There's a lot of that the mind has to face. But there's more ease with it because of compassion. It's hard to open to, but each moment with growing care, there's a feeling of great courage, a feeling of great strength to do that. Sometimes compassion for others grows because we know how it is for ourselves. I know this recently because my daughter, who is always giving me permission to talk about our relationship, not all of it, but some of it. She's having a very stressful time with her daughter, who's 18, who's left the house now, and just worrying about her and all the things that come with it, you know, mother and daughter relationship. So in hearing her, and a lot of her suffering, I realize and remember how it was for me when I was facing that very same thing when she was 18 years old. And so as I face her suffering, which, you know, I can hear about quite often these days because my granddaughter just turned 18, and I hear about, I remember my own suffering. So I just kind of connect the two, and I realize this is universal. In that kind of moment of connection, I'm not realizing the personal nature of it. It's more like realizing the universal nature of it. This is a mother's suffering and a father's suffering, or whoever is close to it. Suffering, this feeling of suffering, it's a universal feeling. And it kind of helps to alleviate the pain of all of that. So if you can, when you come to that understanding, if there's some way in your interaction with the world or your interaction with your deepest part of yourself, see that, like if you're overwhelmed with something going on within yourself, just open to that same experience going on in the world, the experience of that health issue that's going on with you, or the experience of that mother issue, or that partner issue going on, or that job issue going on. If you can open up to the universal issue of it in the world, it helps to open, it helps to give space to it. It helps to kind of understand it in a way that gives us a glimpse of the universality of the impersonal nature of suffering. Either way, it helps, whether it's being bogged down with the cruelty of the world and just seeing the cruelty that exists in your own heart, or vice versa. It really helps to open it up. Having compassion towards those we love is easy, but of course doing it for people that are far away and cruel, this is really hard. Opening to what's happening in Gaddafi's world in Egypt has been very difficult in my moment-to-moment practice when it comes to mind, and it often does, seeing what's happening in that country far away. But then tuning in to, like somebody I hear on NPR who's talking about the suffering that a doctor is going through, and seeing what his patients are going through, that's not so easy to do in a way, because that's far away from me. But when I realize that this could be somebody really close to me, and feel what it would feel like if I were the doctor, or if that person I were treating were my granddaughter or my grandson, how would I feel? It kind of makes my heart open in a different way when I feel the closeness of it, rather than when I feel the bigness of it. So in a way, that can help too, seeing the closeness of it. Opening to the suffering of Gaddafi, that is really, really hard. Having compassion for someone like that, the hardest thing is having compassion for ignorance. I find that kind of the cutting edge of my practice right now. Seeing where there's ignorance in the world and having compassion for that. It requires me to stretch, to grow. My heart isn't there. It's just glimpses of time that it can be there to see how this person, when I see this person on the internet or in the newspapers, how this person too is suffering from deep confusion, from deep delusion. May not be easy to take in, to understand. So this is what compassion is all about. It's facing greed, hatred, and delusion in the world and opening to it with compassion, facing it with compassion. I like the way David White puts it, a poet from the Northwest. "It doesn't interest me if there is one God or many gods," he says. "I want to know if you know despair and can see it in others. I want to know if you're prepared to live in this world with this harsh need to change you. I want to know if you know how to melt into that fierce heat of living, falling toward the center of your being. I want to know if you're willing to live day by day with the consequences of love, with the consequences of facing life with compassion. That last phrase is mine. So some of the terrain of compassion, the near enemy of karuna or compassion is despair or grief. It's a healthy, unhealthy kind of grief, not the grief that we need to have as we're grieving the loss of a loved one, that natural kind of grieving process, but a kind of grief that takes us into such a deep despair that we ourselves are lost in it. It can be pity for oneself or another. It can bring that up. It can seem like compassion because of its softness, but it's too soft. It's collapsing, and it's not having enough energy to float in the sea of life, to respond to what we need to respond to live in a balanced way. It's more like drowning in the suffering of ourselves or others, rather than floating and kind of being able to breathe with it all. There's no clarity here. There's no wisdom here. There's not an ability to really help ourselves or be in the world in a balanced way. So with this state of mind, we're so bogged down with the painful conditions, the inner condition or the outer condition, that it becomes our identity. We can lead into life with our wounds, as someone says. And William Stafford says in his poem about woundedness, they turn into pearls, they take on a luster, they accumulate as decorations or badges. We become identified with our pain, build them up. Build all those moments into a me, into a mine, into a who I am. I remember very clearly in the car with Manindraji. It was not too long after I moved to Maui and brought Manindraji here to do a retreat on Maui. After the retreat, I was driving down Haleakala Highway with him, and I was telling him the story for the umpteenth time, probably more than in the teens. It was probably in the 20th time or more. I was telling him the broken record of why I was so pitiful, why coming to America as a single parent of three children, that I was still kind of living out that weakness in my life. And that it was very difficult to live with these memories and the hardships that I had to go through, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And so Manindra, I was driving and Manindra is on my right, and I can see he has a certain way that he puts his mouth that I just know he's going to come out with a Zen stick sooner or later. But I was kind of asking for it, I think. So he said, I remember his words almost to a T. The past is dead and gone. The future is not yet born. But in this moment, you are making your future. You are reliving your past, which carries out into the future. By repeating this story over and over and over again, this is the future you're creating. You can stop making that future. The choice is yours. It's up to you. So then he just shut up, and I just shut up. I didn't tell the story too many more times after that, but I think I did tell it a few more times. So we can be overcome with despair and pity for ourselves, collapsing so much within, and we're no help to ourselves. We're just creating a life that's full of the same thing, over and over again. So the question is, can we incline the mind towards being gentle, accepting that moment of habit pattern with gentleness, accepting that moment of cruelty that we inflict upon ourselves with more gentleness? As we practice that, we might be able to practice that more with others, to see the same thing happening in others. It's hard. I know it's hard. I'm getting there, but it's a hard place to be. A compassion phrase that I like to use is, may I open to this pain, whether it's the inner pain or outer pain. Just even in the moment, I like to say, may I open to this pain with gentleness, so that it gives my own practice direction. It's as if I was hearing Munindra speak to me. Not the Zen stick words, but these gentle words. May I open to this pain with gentleness, so that I'm having the courage to open, for one thing, but I'm reminding myself of the gentleness, of the tenderness, not to strike it out with, like, go away, or not to close down and turn to something more pleasant, but to really face what there is inside, and then to be able to let go. Because with compassion accompanying mindful attention, there is this ability to let go. Karuna is described as the quivering of the heart in response to pain. The quivering of the heart means you're alive. You feel your heart with more aliveness, not with a deadness, not with a numbing down or a dumbing down of what's happening. It helps us to know life as it really is, the true nature of life. The Buddha says there is one thing, O monks, the not seeing of, which keeps us bound on this cycle of suffering. And that is the noble truth of suffering. So one of the most powerful things that compassion helps us to do is open to the noble truth of suffering. Because when we don't see suffering, we keep suffering. It keeps us bound on that cycle of life. But when mindfulness does see suffering courageously, clearly, it can see it in its impermanent, impersonal form. And this naturalness of letting go can take place. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, the stronger your realization of suffering, the stronger your aspiration to be free. A few years ago, a person at a retreat, this was at a retreat at back east at Insight Meditation Society, came to me with tears, a lot of tears, but she wasn't sobbing in a way that she was overwhelmed with it. There were just kind of tears gently falling. And they weren't tears of pain, she said. They were tears of joy, because she was finally able to open to some great mental pain that was in her heart, some great deal of mental abuse that she had sustained for a long, long time. There were tears of compassion she was able to let go. So this is where opening to suffering with compassion really helps our ability to deeply let go. So I packed a lot in. I hope it wasn't too much. There can be a lot more, but those are the main things about compassion. The ability to open to all of life, the ability to be able to face it with gentleness and courage, not close down, not strike out at, not dumb down or numb out. and the ability to open to suffering in a way that helps us to open to the truth of life and to see the impersonal, impermanent nature of it. There's a lot that can be said about that last part, but this practice of letting go really necessitates the practice of compassion. So I want to end with this beautiful poem by Dana Faulds. This is from her book, Go In and In. And the name of this poem is Let It Go. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. So let go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you receive it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanation it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go, and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. So let's let the silence dissolve the words and be with that place of rest inside your own heart.